Hi, it's Greg and Lucky.
And this is our podcast. If you don't catch us from 5 to 9, this is what you missed.
We're back into daylight savings. I completely forgot till about 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I was just walking down the hall from our lunchroom, and a couple of coworkers were in the lunchroom gabbing about how they feel groggy and off today. And I don't get, for the life of me, I don't get it.
Right.
We get so weird with this 1 hour change.
I mean, I felt that yesterday morning I had to set an alarm in order to get up and go to that Team Town Sports where we were at this weekend.
Oh, yeah. You must have been rolling around in that hockey section.
It was nice. It's a nice store. I really like how they laid out that whole store.
How many jock straps did you try on?
None.
On your head.
Right. Although I was chatting with John Tavares last night, so that, you know, that was sniffing around jock straps.
Oh, look at you dropping names.
That's right.
Where was he that you were gabbing with him?
He was at the Generals game.
Oh, nice.
Regardless, I thought as I woke up, you know, as the alarm went off, I thought, man, this is, I'm feeling it. I was just tired. It was a Sunday morning. I wanted to sleep in.
There was one guy who came Saturday because I was there, and he was upset that you weren't there because I guess his son was facing off against your son in some big game Saturday night.
Oh, okay.
And he wanted to cause some trouble.
Right.
I said, no, you can come and find Lucky here tomorrow, but you might not be able to find him because he'll be kissing up to the manager at the store. The remote was 10 o'clock in the morning. I was more graphic in what I said you'd be doing with
the
manager.
I'm sure, right.
I said you'd be very busy between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be unavailable. Yeah, it's a lovely store. Yep, and it's all team sports. And if you look on the window, there's a lot of team sports.
Yeah.
They sell everything from, you know, of course, hockey stuff, like to rugby and cricket and everything. Yeah.
It was curling section.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. And, you know, as a, obviously a hockey parent and, in this area, it's nice to see big new store come in, maybe some competition and availability of items.
Yeah, no, it's all very lovely. I mean, I didn't see any of the store. What am I looking at? What do I care?
Right there in the front door and you're good.
Yeah, I was fine. Anyhow, if you're feeling groggy today because of the changing of the clocks, here's also a little fun little tip. You're also more likely to die today.
What?
Yep. There's an increase in numbers of heart attacks in the first week after we spring forward each year.
Oh.
Yeah, there's a big increase on the first Monday after clock shift and a bump in the number of strokes in the first 2 days.
Why?
They don't know. It's just outside of the disruption of our body's internal clock. But again, I say this all the time. We take flights around the world with time differences.
Yeah.
Like you lose half a day. You go to Australia or you gain a day or however it works. You go to Europe, it's 6 hours this way. You go out west, it's 3 hours that way. Yet we can't sleep through the night and wake up at 9 a.m. because we think it's still 8 a.m.
Yeah.
And we're a disaster.
I know. And we'll sit and we'll watch a hockey game or a sporting event where...
Put a toonie in the jar.
Where these players have flown across the continent.
Yeah.
And 3-4 hours difference. And we'll look at it and go, oh, come on, wake up.
No, I know. Yeah. Is that what people do when they watch the hockey?
They do. They make that voice.
It's an annoying voice. Just another annoying part of that annoying game. Actually, the dad who came in to see if you were there said to me, what are you doing here? I said, I have no idea. I have no idea. I'm the last person out of the radio station that should be anywhere near this store. Anyhow, they're not sure, again, why it happens outside of just that hour change. Springing forward can be deadly in other ways, too. For example, sleep-deprived drivers have been linked to an increase in fatal car crashes this time of year. In general, accidents are most likely to happen during morning commutes on the first Monday after the time change between the hours of 6 a.m. and 8 a.m. So we're in the danger zone. Be careful out there, kids. Yeah, it's strange. I don't know. And I guess the spring forward messes it up more because you lose the hour, right?
Right.
Instead of the falling back.
Yeah.
Where we gain the hour. But we still complain during the
Of well. Course we do.
This is good new technology. Probably never really want to know what's going on in a kitchen at a restaurant and who's actually touching your food. But there's a new product that's supposedly going to be installed at many restaurants, and hopefully all restaurants inevitably. It's called the hand scanner. And basically, it's a hand washing lie detector. It looks like a mounted hand dryer. A worker places their hands under it after washing their hands, palms up, then palms down. And within 2 seconds, it can identify any residual contaminant. It's not brand new technology. A similar system is already used in the healthcare industry. And, of course, the customers don't see the hand scanner reports. It's mostly meant to just alert workers when they need to rewash their hands if contaminants are still stuck.
Kind of like black light or something like that?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, still stuck in hard-to-clean areas like beneath fingernails and around jewelry. The worker is then instructed to rewash and retest. The system can also rat you out to the boss. So, yeah, send a notice to the boss that you got dirty palms.
I was going
to
say, like, okay, honestly, who's going to stop and do this then if they don't have to?
Right.
But maybe they'll be forced to before they
re-enter
the kitchen.
If the boss gets some sort of notification on their phone.
Right.
Joey's got the dirty fingers.
You know, in any company, it's tough to get everyone to buy into the system, especially if it's going to cost them time or effort. Extra effort, that is. But, I mean, something like that, like food poisoning. If you get it at a restaurant, you know you're never going back there.
You know, I sense that we might have weakened our immune system just by the overwashing. Like, if you think back to, you know, not that long ago, a couple of few decades, the, I'm sure, shenanigans that went on in kitchens. I, for one, sticking my burnt hand into frozen pepperoni and then serving it. And people seem to survive.
Right.
You know, now you get a whiff of salmonella. We're down for months. You used to just eat salmonella on a sandwich.
Right.
You know, it was like a condiment.
Yeah.
Back in the 70s. Did you watch the Oscars last night?
I did.
I know, I'm shocked.
It's not something I normally do, but I got home from the game and thought, let's throw it on. I had taped it. I wanted to see the monologue, and In Memoriam is usually what I stick around for. I fast-forwarded through a lot of these speeches because, man, those do drag on.
Well, especially when you start getting into the, you know, animated feature and documentary feature.
Right.
And best short and film editing.
Yeah. And I understand it is their moment among their peers. And, you know, if you in your line of work were to have an award ceremony and your award was skipped over, you weren't allowed to accept it in front of everyone, you'd be cheesed off. So I do get it. Plus, they added a new style of presenting the nominees, where they were bringing up past winners and doing it, which, in some senses, I thought was really nice. It gives them another stroke.
Yep.
It also gives them a chance to, you know, heartfelt congratulations to the nominee. What I really wished they had to make it even longer would be just a quick clip of them acting in the movie. Because I didn't watch any of the movies. I watched an hour of Oppenheimer and fell asleep. And that was it.
Yeah, we watched The Holdovers, and and it was good. He's great in it. I don't know that
Paul Giamatti, I think, was in it. Yeah,
yeah. I don't know that it was Oscar worthy. The thing that made it so interesting is they had put something. I want to say it was some sort of contact lens.
Yes.
In one of his eyes.
So yeah, they mentioned like that.
Pointed up a bit, because you want to make Paul Giamatti look a little stranger. but he's a terrific actor. And it looks like, I guess, Oppenheimer really won the night. They had Best Picture and Best Director and Best Supporting Actor and Best Actor and Best Film Editing, Best Cinematography. It went on and on and on.
So. Tough to be honest. It's tough to figure out who the biggest loser was in it, if it was Barbie or Maestro with Bradley Cooper.
I want to say Bradley Cooper, because what was the story we had the other day about that 2014 Oscar photo of all the celebs and how bad their life has gone since? And Bradley Cooper was also in the photo, and it had said he had been up for like 7 Oscars since then and never won.
The Ellen selfie from 2014.
So he got hooped again. sitting there with his mom. I think Ryan Gosling brought his mom along as well.
Okay.
She was sitting beside him.
His performance of that Just Ken was something else.
It was great.
He went all out with that. And crowd singing and, Slash was up there. Mark Ronson was playing bass. I didn't really show him on camera very much, but I think Wolfgang Van Halen was part of it too.
He was right beside Slash.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was there playing. So yeah, that, you know, good on Ryan Gosling for that. And there was some fun moments. And, you know, I thought Jimmy Kimmel did just fine. I thought the shot at Robert Downey Jr. being high was a little offside. I mean, the guy, of course, has had a history with drug abuse, but
I mean,
it's been talked about enough.
Yeah.
It's kind of a dated joke. John Cena was great.
The Naked Pit. Holy cow.
Very funny.
that's ballsy.
Yeah, that it is. He's brave. He's in a new movie on Netflix too that we watch Friday night. Ricky Skinicki or something it's called. And, it's a comedy. And yeah, he doesn't mind, you know, playing the fool.
No. Stripping down. We did that, as well in the movie, he was playing the boyfriend.
Okay, Amy Schumer.
Yes, that's right.
In a train wreck.
Yes.
Hey, look at, I remembered a name. Look at me.
Yeah, and people are really talking about the Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger bit that he did with Batman and Michael Keaton as being like a pivotal moment in Oscar's history. I don't know about that.
I don't know if it was pivotal.
It was funny.
Yeah, it was good.
I don't know if it was the best moment in Oscar's history. And while, you know, they brought out at the very end Pacino as a nod to the anniversary of The Godfather, and it wasn't Warren Beatty bad in terms of presenting the final award.
Yeah.
But it was up there.
I will say this. We'll play the clip here in a second. I'll say this about Al Pacino. He's one of those odd ducks that every time I've seen him interviewed over the years, and it's rare, he rarely would go on like the late night talk shows, but anytime he did, he always seems awkward and out of place,
right,
and socially strange. You know, De Niro showed up on Real Time with Bill Maher on Friday night, and he was great. De Niro he's quiet and reserved, but when he speaks, he makes a point.
Yeah.
You understand him. He's still, you know, very kind of wise, and he's an old man now, but he has his senses about him. Al Pacino, even when he was a younger man, always seemed just off a little bit.
Well, listen, if you are putting up, and I understand it was an anniversary thing.
Sure.
But if the person you're inviting up needs to wear sneakers because they can't fit into shoes comfortably anymore, then maybe that's a sign.
Well, we shouldn't mock that.
I understand. goodness. And what kills me in all of this, my theory is he needed glasses and that he couldn't read the teleprompter.
Right.
And so it looked like he had a cue card on top of the envelope and he wasn't referring to it. So he got up there, tried to go by memory.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a bloody actor. His job is to read lines.
Mm-hmm.
So why he couldn't stand up there and just read the lines, to me, it reeks that he needed his glasses and didn't want to wear them up there or forgot them. I don't know.
Listen, I think you're being a little harsh on Mr. Pacino. He was Tony Montana.
Right.
Well, Michael Corleone.
Well, you want to talk about high moments. He looked like he was having a Tony Montana high moment. He forgot to read the nominees.
Yeah, no, it wasn't good. But I will say, of the running shoes, I think that was a trend last night because I saw a few actors in suits with running shoes on.
Well, I mean,
so maybe that's a new look.
I've got a pair of them. They have a dress sneaker kind of thing. The ones he was wearing were basically just Adidas.
Right.
Like blacked out. But it was, I just think, and you can tell that there was an issue because when he did read out Oppenheimer, they had to scramble to get cameras on people.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being is they had all the cameras set up to go back into all the nominees.
Right.
And so when he read it the way he read it, they had to scramble to get a camera on the winner.
Yeah. It wasn't as best.
No.
Moment. But I would say even with the running shoes thing, Letterman, back to when he was doing the NBC show, he used to wear the high cut running shoes
right.
With the suit. So
yeah.
It's always been maybe something that's in and out of fashion. Anyhow, here it is. Al Pacino wrapping up the Oscars. Awkward.
Did I do some Shakespeare now? I think is in order, right? To be. No, I'm not going to do it. No. Sorry. Well, this is the time for the last award of the evening. And it's my honor to present it. 10 wonderful films were nominated, but only one will take the award for Best Picture. And I have to go to the envelope for that. And I will. Here it comes. And my eyes see Oppenheimer. Yes. Yes. Emma Thomas.
Now that I hear it back, and I've listened to it a couple of times before we ran it this morning, there sounds like there's something else going on. Like
right.
The speech is slurred. Like he might not be doing well.
Right.
There's something. Either he was just hammered.
Yeah.
Or there's something actually going downhill for him.
Who else is not doing well while that is happening is like the director and yeah. producer behind the scenes having a seizure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what is he doing?
Yeah. Just bring out last year's winner.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the idea of the anniversaries. It's all nice. But at some point, you got to pull the plug. He made Joe Biden look like 37 years old. Well, here's a movie that probably won't be up for any Oscars next year. In May on the 3rd, coming to Netflix. It's Jerry Seinfeld's Pop-Tart movie.
Oh, right.
He's producing, directing, starring in it. And he's very excited to announce that the person playing Tony the Tiger is Hugh Grant.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, this character will be a disgruntled Shakespearean actor who, much to his chagrin, finds himself having to don the Tony the Tiger outfit. Jerry said that was the greatest part of the whole thing, honestly, because I'm a huge fan of his. He said, Hugh asked me if it matters that Tony the Tiger has a British accent. And I told him, no, who cares?
It's Seinfeld's world. He does what he wants.
Yeah. Who cares? Speaking of movies, the upcoming Michael Jackson biopic will not gloss over the child molestation allegations against him. But it does take a pretty biased stance. A journalist who read an early draft of the script says the movie wants very much to convince you Michael is innocent, and it goes to great lengths to minimize and downplay the actual claims. It's not surprising since the movie has had the blessing of Michael's estate.
Right, yeah. Can't imagine that they would allow that to go on.
No. And I believe his like nephew or something is actually playing him in the movie, so...
Oh.
Michael's nephew.
Well, I think one of the actors up for Best Actor last night, they suggested was playing his father.
Oh, yeah?
Right.
Yeah, that'd be a tough role. Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, I can't remember who that is, but right, that was brought up. And Madonna pulled a complete boner. So she's performing, and she sees a fan who's in her seat sitting, and she screams at her, "What are you doing sitting down there? Get up!"
Oh, no.
Then she went to the edge of the stage to investigate. Turns out the fan's in a wheelchair.
Right.
She said, "Oh, okay, sorry about that. I'm glad you're here." Well, you know, when your face is pulled that horribly, hard to see anything.
Hard to get your foot into your mouth, but she managed to.
What a train wreck. You know, it's amazing how, and I guess she's just like so many trying to keep her youth, but it just gets to the point of ridiculous.
Mm.
And she is at the point of complete ridiculous.
Wow, you've seen so many do it. Take Michael Jackson for one.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, others fighting the fountain of youth or trying to find the fountain of youth.
Yeah.
And fighting the age thing going on. And it must be such a tough industry. And most of us, you can look at it and you can mock it. But, you know, most of us don't lose jobs because we look older.
No, and it's, listen, obviously, just after International Women's Day, it is so much harder for women in that industry.
Right.
Men tend to, it's always been said that we're kind of gangly and odd and weird looking when we're younger, but we age gracefully if we take some sort of care of ourselves. Whereas women, right away, by the time the gray hairs start coming in, it's just like, oh, you're done.
Right.
It's over for you. So you see a lot of actors who carry on, men carrying on in roles that they're way beyond the age they should be playing them.
Right.
But somebody like, look at half the women last night at the Oscars. At this stage of their career, they're playing the moms or the grandmothers.
Grandmothers, I was going to say.
Yeah. But anyhow, all of that aside, Madonna's surgery. Horrible. And for Wild Fork in Whitby, it is the godfather of the grill, Ted Reeder. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Craig. Good morning, Lucky.
Morning, Ted. How are you?
I can't complain. You know, it's March break. Kids are home for a week. Right. Life is insane. It'll be a pain in the ass all week long.
I was going to say, that sounds like a lot of complaining.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you got children home for the week, well, you know, it's insane. There's not enough vodka in the world to go around.
No. The kids need the break. You know,
they're right.
Far,
yeah.
Their life is far too
stressed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh.
Although it does look like it'll be a great week for grilling.
It is. In fact, other than yesterday, it was a little bit cold. It's a pretty spectacular week ahead for getting out to the grill, making some tasty burgers, steaks, whatever you want to cook. Get out there and have some fun.
I was looking at your Instagram page, and you have this terrific beer can chicken sandwich with the carrots and the crazy Canuck barbecue sauce, the fried egg. Looks lovely, all wrapped up in a toasted roll, and it got me thinking. I said this to Lucky just before we had you on the air. Got me thinking of the classic beer can chicken, and it was probably the first thing I ever cooked after learning it from you. From all the different things going way back, there was that and also the planked mashed potatoes I remember trying for the first time after you told us how to do it. But the beer can chicken is such a classic and so tasty. And I would imagine that many of us know of it or have done it. But for those who haven't done it and don't know the process of a beer can chicken, let's go over that recipe.
Well, it's pretty easy. And you can do this on your grill, or you can even do it in your oven if you want. But the essential base of it all is that you are vertical roasting your chicken. So as the fats and the juices, they self-based, get a can of beer, crack open. Tall boy works a little bit better on this, okay, than a short can.
Mm-hmm.
Crack it open. Take a huge sip off of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, because you got to know if it's good quality. You got to test your ingredients.
True. Yeah.
So, you might have to open a second can. And
when you shotgun the first, like Van, yeah.
Well, and
yes.
Let's see if Teddy remembers the other tip he shared with me many, many years ago about that beer can. What else did you say to do after you open it up and take a sip?
Well, you can stuff some fresh herbs down into the can.
No, you didn't say that. You didn't say that.
Okay.
Well, you can, okay? Insert into the butt of the chicken.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Stand it up. And there are accessories that you can get out there, beer can chicken holders that'll hold the can of beer and offer some support. You want to have a little plate underneath that can so that it'll catch the dripping so you won't have a big flare-up on your grill.
Gotcha.
Very important. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Get your grill to about 375, 400 degrees. You're going to rub your whole chicken down beforehand, season it up, whether you want salt and pepper or my bone dust rub on there, whatever you like, jerk it up, and then into your grill, close the lid, and let her go. And that's it. When it gets to 165 degrees on the thickest part of the thigh, you're all done.
That's perfect.
What did I miss, Ben? What did I miss?
Oh, I'm going to tell you in a second. I think you also told us at one point to take like a little potato or an onion and shove it in the neck of the chicken to hold the steam in there.
You can do that, and that is a good point. Or just take the neck skin. skin,
okay,
and pull it tightly over so that it seals up that hole a little bit. So you can take like a small little potato and put it in there, or a wedge of onion, or just pull the skin over and that'll be fine too. You want it, really what it is it's roasting from the outside. That can is going to steam and it's going to offer moisture and keep your bird nice and moist on the inside. Does it add a lot of beer flavor? Not at all.
No.
It's pretty minor. You can drink the beer and fill the can with water, and that won't be a waste of beer, and that would be a good thing.
Right.
And then you can start basting the bird at some point, too, right, with a barbecue sauce?
You can baste it with whatever you want. You want to put a sauce on it, great. You want to squeeze a little lemon over top of it, however you want to have that chicken. Once it's pulled, shut your grill down. Let it rest for a few minutes because that can is going to be very hot, right?
Yep.
And then using a pair of oven gloves and a pair of tongs, pull that chicken off the hot can. Let it cool completely, the can, so that you can drain it later and recycle the can. And then cut your chicken up. Put it on a bun. I added some roasted carrots to it and made a sandwich. Pretty tasty.
This was,
pretty
I remember, simple. Such a craze when beer can chicken first started. They had to actually, like, basically redesign barbecues with higher level lids,
right,
in order to fit the chickens into them.
Yeah. I think I published my first beer can chicken recipe would have been about 2003, I think, 20 years ago, easily.
Yeah.
Easily. And it's, you know, where did it come from? I don't know. Some Texan was drunk and
and stuffing
shoved
things.
Shoved a can up the butt of a chicken and said, here we go.
Go to town on it.
Yeah, and no, go to town and have a good time.
Like I said, I remember when you first introduced me to it, and I raced out to the barbecue store, and I got all the gadgets I needed to make my first beer can chicken, and then I went crazy for them. I think that summer I must have done them at least a dozen times. Anytime we had people coming over, it was beer can chicken night, courtesy of Teddy Reeder. And here's what you forgot to mention, Teddy, because in your wilder, crazier days, perhaps, this is what you used to do. You told me to take a slug of the beer and then dump an ounce of Jack Daniels in it.
There was going to be some adding some Jack to it.
Of course I did.
So I raced. I also raced to the liquor store to buy a Mickey of Jack Daniels so I could pour some. I listened to you every step of the way, Ted.
Oh, my God. I'm glad I've influenced your life like this. The insanity of it.
Yeah.
Craig Venn listening to Ted Reeder. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And
Get a life, man.
I'm still upright, Teddy. I'm still upright.
That's just like the chicken.
Yeah, that's right. I'm basted like the chicken. That's right.
That's it. But, you know, like, Ren, what's great about you is, and it's hard to come up with what it is, but what is great about you?
Not much.
Well, you love to cook.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And it doesn't matter your level of expertise. The thing is to get out there and cook every day that you can. Use up your leftovers, right? With the cost of food the way it is right now, you have to be a little bit more strategic on what you're cooking and either not creating too many leftovers if you're not a leftovers person, or you're making enough leftovers that you can feed the family and continue those meals on. Don't waste. Be strategic in the way of what you're going to cook. You know, don't overcook. Use your ingredients properly. You'll save a little bit of money that way.
Very good, Ted. Always wise. Always wise, our godfather of the grill. Teddy, if people want to talk to you about beer, canned chicken, or any other grilling, how do they get a hold of you?
You're going to find me at Ted Grills.
Rock Mornings with Craig Venn and Lucky. 94.9 The Rock.